Okay, so I'm going to talk about smooth grid transformations, and we'll get to a definition of what smooth is a little bit later. But this work is really coming out of the ideas of Schmidt, and in fact, I'm going to show you some results of a new formulation, semi-Lagrange, semi-implicit, that uses a Schmidt transformation to focus a grid. Then see if I can extend that a little bit too. Thought I'd digress a little bit into the evolution of acronyms. At one point, someone suggested that there were CHAMP codes. In fact, the CHAMP program was involved in Department of Energy started off being heavily involved in this conference and some of these efforts. And over the years, things have changed. So I just thought I'd trace through a little bit of how this worked. We deleted the middle letters, and it became CCPP. And you had to put in two letters in the middle, the two C's, because two-letter acronyms just don't work. And the A came down here for ACPI. The C came down, and the P retained. I was actually new. In this acronym, and but then these two programs kind of merged and have carried forward into what's now called SIDAC. And so from all of this, we still have the A and the C. We lost the M, but we gained some S. Okay, so that's the. Going, you know, you have to acknowledge your sponsors. So let's use a pointer. This is a different formulation, an invective formulation for the shallow water equations. Instead of taking the formulating it with your semi-Lagrange discretization on velocity and then taking divergence and curl of that, this deals strictly with the equations themselves to get into a semi-Lagrange form. So you're of course familiar with these, but this one is perhaps less well known, and Daniel Guo found this, and it seems to have worked very nicely. So we used this, and there's a report that goes through all the test cases using this on an unstretched grid that I can point you to. We did this as a semi-Lagrange system, but I wanted to point out that there's a Laplacian operator there and a Laplacian operator here, but that's really it. There's this first order derivative is on F, the Coriolis term. So this makes it and there's also a Laplace operator hidden in this F twiddle here too. But it's strictly based on a Laplace operator, so this is nice for grid transformations because you're only having to deal with the Laplacian. The semi-Lagrange formulation in a semi-implicit form pans out something like this, where the A is indicating arrival points, and so we have the standard spectral semi-implicit system that deals with the gravity waves, and then the right-hand side terms evaluated at arrival and departure points are expanded there. Just for completeness, there's the other one. So these terms have Laplacians in them. So using that formulation, we wanted to explore some smooth grid transformations. And of course, Schmidt introduced this one in 76 or so. And conformal maps and so forth have been used in aerospace for forever. So it should be familiar, but there was a paper that followed Schmitt's that actually proved that Schmitt's was basically the only conformal map. It's restricted to degree 2, and so, but at the end of that paper, they conjectured that maybe there were quasi-conformal maps that would also be nice to use in this setting. Now, Schmitt did this with a Eulerian formulation, and he had to deal with more than just the Laplace operator. So what I'm going to talk about really just deals with the Laplace operator. And if you look at the grid generation literature, basically what you're trying to do is define a transformation, change of coordinates from a physical space to what I'll call a parametric or computational space, x and y nominally to c and eta. And the general sort of elliptic grid transformations satisfy an equation like this, where the g's are metric terms, computed from the values of the coordinate transformation itself, the derivatives of the coordinate transformations. And this p and q, so these are derivatives here, the p and the q are what are called control functions to control the local stretching of the grid. So the idea is we're going to cook up a transformation, and Schmitt will be our first example, that does this map that lands you on the regular Gaussian grid, so you can do your spectral computations here. But over here, it's been deformed to focus on some area of interest or something like that. Okay, so if you try to translate what is this business about conformal mean, the grid literature anyway says, okay, well, conformal is when the G11, G22 happen to turn out to be 1. And in fact, the G12, the cross term, is 0. So what we're going to do in going to more general things would be to relax that restriction, which would mean that we have to carry all these metric terms. We have to carry metric terms if we're going to do quasi-conformal transformations. So in that setting, the Laplacian generalizes to, this is a non-conservative form in the computational domain and the computational coordinates, like this. And the grid stretching functions then, in fact, show up, the control functions that you're going to use actually show up in your Laplacian. For the Schmitt transformation, this is it. X is C, so that's the longitude coordinate, and then the latitude coordinate is stretched. Now, this is just the stretching. So what Schmitt does is it takes the Gaussian grid and it collapses it towards the pole, just a smooth stretching of it, moving the points towards the pole, and then rotates it. You can rotate it to any particular point of interest. And so under this rather simple transformation, where the C is the stretching factor, if you set it to 1, you didn't move anything. 2 to 3 is normally what's used. The form of Laplacian is particularly nice. The del squared in the physical space turns into same form of the operator in the computational space, multiplied times a mapping factor. So you can see that this is a much simpler form than the general form. So the conformal case, you don't have to deal with all these metric terms. So the key thing you have to figure out is what's the Laplacian in spectral space under this transformation. And so what happens is the mapping factor enters into your projection, your spectral projection. And if you work it out and use some identities, it turns out that the Laplacian in spectral space, the MN component of it, which would normally, you know, just give you a single eigenvalue, is now a linear combination of sort of nearby spectral coefficients of the phi of your quantity. So what happens is instead of a diagonal matrix representing your Laplacian, you now have a pentadiagonal matrix representing the Laplacian under this transformation. And in fact, it's a very structured pentadiagonal. For each fixed m, you get a pentadiagonal. So it's block pentadiagonal. It separates with m as well. Now this equation is really based on the following. Following thing, that if you have a map factor that looks like this, a simple quadratic, okay, so this is the Schmidt mapping factor, where the eta coordinate, if you multiply that very simple polynomial times a associated Legendre function, Mn, you get this, where the C's are given there. So that's what it's really based on. And to generalize to go to more general smooth grid transformations, that's actually the thing that will change. Okay, I'm going to show you a few results from this semi-Lagrange, semi-implicit formulation with the test cases and using stretching or not. Now, what we've done is, I think these are all with a stretching factor of 2. And then the rotation, we rotated the point of interest sort of into the path of things. All right, so on test case 1, we put it above the equator so that the cosine bell would blow through it, blow through the area of focus. And in fact, it's centered on the area of focus at day 2. So you're looking down right on top of where this would be, and the contours of this is the stretched grid, so this is with you expect this to be slightly more accurate than the unstretched grid, and it turns out to be if you look at the scales and so forth, a little smoother too. Now, at day 8, you're over on the other side, and if you've forced all your resolution into one side of the hemisphere, well, you've taken it, you've stolen it from the other side. So, in fact, you have a coarser solution, coarser grid on the other hemisphere. And in fact, so here the roles reverse. We have a much less accurate solution than the unstretched grid on the other side. So I think these are all fairly intuitive results. When you get back to your, after one rotation, so this is the standard, okay, what's the error? Well, you've gone through a highly resolved all the way around through a coarse resolved, and you're back to your original location, and of course you've kept all those errors with you. So I think this points out some simple ideas and something to think about with sort of these regionally resolved models and the like in terms of global stuff. Here is the I guess it's the L2 error with stretching. So it actually, and this is without stretching on the regular grid, and so you're more accurate up to, you know, as you're going through the highly resolved area, and then you lose it. Now test case 5. For test case 5, we located the stretched area directly over top of the mountain. And so day 0, 5, 10, 15. And so this is the picture everybody's you've seen a good bit. And it compares very well with the spectral method. And in fact, one of the things we were looking for in the reference case, you actually see a little bit of noise here in front of the mountain, and this disappeared. It disappeared with that. Now, if you look at what happens with different stretching factors, this is the top plot is the difference between the unstretched grid and a stretched grid of, this is 1.5 stretching factor and this is 2. And both of these are snapshots at day 5. So I think what you see is that the stretching at 1.5 concentrated the grid a little bit here and coarsened it, of course, back here. So you see you see a difference with the unstretched grid. And as you go to the more highly stretched, this area is just concentrated. So what you're seeing is exaggeration of some of the peaks, resolving some of the waves a little bit there. Now, yeah, exactly. This is all T42 grid. I'm sorry. Yeah, everything I've shown was T42. Okay, so on case 5, this now shows the energy with the regular grid, what's happening with energy with the regular grid, and then all the energy with the stretching and the rotation. So what you're seeing is an improvement then in energy conservation over the standard semi-Lagrange spectral method there. Okay, one of the concepts that Schmidt introduced was the idea of spectral closure. He wanted to say, okay, if you do a grid transformation, or do you stay in the right spectral space? And what he meant by that was, is your tendencies. If you plug in a spectral representation for your fields, does the tendencies that you compute then, are they actually in the same spectral space, or what happens? And what he showed was that he had closure if you added two more modes. So this quadratic factor on your mapping factor essentially bumped up what you needed in your spectral representation by 2 degrees. So suppose we look at a different kind of quasi-conformal grid, and my colleague Ahmed Kamesh generated this grid using the P and Q. I gave him a P and Q from Earth's surface geopotential, and so using those control functions, he stretches the grid essentially towards orography. And so you can see see North America and Andes and Himalayas emerging. So this is the standard T42, I believe it's, well, not sure that's the way he's plotted it, but that's where you take a T42, Gauss grid and deform it. So this happens to have G11 not equal to G22. So, I mean, if you can see that the lines don't stay straight. things have to curve. So what we've been interested in is trying to figure out if we could possibly use that kind of grid. So if you assumed that the G, the grid, if I took his grid and formed a spectral representation of those X and Y functions that he gave, maybe it's even a lower order spectral approximation, T5, T10, something of that nature, but higher than 2. If you assumed that you could represent then the term that's multiplying in your spectral projection, the term that's multiplying the spherical harmonic, assume that it has a spectral representation, can be expanded, in fact, in, say, an M plus K sort of space. Then the generalized Laplacian would be computed from terms like this, like the second derivative on the phi here. So you'd have to be trying to deal with this, with the expansion of that in a similar way that Schmidt did. But now, so it would turn into a representation that looks like this, where if you substituted the representation from before, all these coefficients of this thing expand now into that. So it looks like you can certainly represent in the transformed grid, in a quasi-conformal transformed grid, you can represent this and turn out with a linear operator in the spectral space. Of course, the trouble is that this may become dense. Instead of the straight pentadiagonal system, this operator may be significantly more complicated. And I don't believe so. What we're planning to do is to actually implement what it is and take a look at it structurally. So there may be some smart idea that you can choose a particular smoothing or particular shapes that you would approximate your grid transformation by and control some of the structure. It could be that there are numerical algorithms that would, for example, drop tolerance type things with the factorizations that you could develop an approximate L that might be just as good. But anyway, that's where we're going to try to take it to see if we can extend the algorithm to those smooth grids. So finally, I tell you what smooth means. It means you can expand it in a spectral approximation. And if you do that, then I think you still have closure to M plus K. Not that does you a whole lot of good, but because you're then going to want to truncate and approximate and so forth. But it looks possible to do. Thank you.